Well, good morning, Paula.
Good morning. We have Sean on the line with us.
Well, Sean is definitely one of our favorite men that we like to have by our side. He's been with us last May. He was with us as well. And he brings stunning, accurate predictions of future events in his books and lectures and monthly Delphi Associates newsletter. And it's considered the number one publication of its kind in America. It has brought him international recognition as one of America's premier futurists, mystics, researchers, and spiritual teachers. A radio host, Art Bell, has called him America's prophet, frighteningly accurate, and my all-time favorite guest. Sean's insights, visions, intensity of information, and wonderful sense of humor in his exhaustive, extensive workshops have brought in sell-out crowds and made him the most popular speaker everywhere he goes.
Well, Sean has been a reporter, a writer, a producer for Strange Universe, Hard Copy, and Sightings. He has written, produced, and or appeared on Best Kept Secrets, Destination Earth, Sightings, Encounters, Ancient Prophecies, Mysteries, Magic and Miracles, The Other Side, Paranormal Borderline, Montel Williams, Geraldo Rivera, Now It Can Be Told, Vicky, Hard Copy, and has been the number one guest for 14 years on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome, Sean. We can't wait to hear what you have to say about the election today.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you? I was just basking in the warm glow of that amazing introduction. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, let's. You want to launch into the election stuff first?
Okay. Well, you can tell a little bit about your astrology and the background in astrology that you have and what you did this summer.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been studying astrology all my life and taking classes, and I had kind of a Dutch uncle, if you will, who was an astrologer for the Beatles, and through that we actually became very good friends with George Harrison, and George Harrison was very involved in astrology. So after all this time and all this knowledge that I'd accumulated about the astrological aspects of it, I just decided to do something with it, and I got accepted to the British School of Astrological Studies at Oxford University. So I was at Exeter College at Oxford University this last summer studying astrology with Rob Hand and Michael Luton and Bernadette Brady and Joy Boehm and basically some of the most famous astrologers from all over the world, the people that have written the computer programs upon which most astrology is based. So I got to spend most of the month of August there actually just in intense study about all the systems, which was great because it just honed my astrological abilities about how to do progressions and transits and you know, putting things sort of more into the future. And at the same time, astrologers are very, you know, they're a very dry sort of academic scientific bunch. So I try to take all that intellectualism, if you will, and try to temper it with some compassion, because they say an intelligence devoid from compassion is insanity, as they say. So I'm trying to make sense of all that. So I've just done some very interesting astrological things on the elections. I kind of I sat these elections out as far as predictions go. I very much saw this election as being a nexus point, a crossroads, if you will, for future events, depending on which way the country was going to go. I had I think 2 years ago I talked about how I saw some involvement with Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney in the election process. And, you know, Mitt Romney was a candidate, but obviously never made it. Every other psychic and astrologer and everybody out there, you know, was proclaiming that Hillary Clinton was going to be president of the United States, and I continued to say that's wrong. She's not going to be president. She's unelectable. The only way that she could become president of the United States would be if there was a strong third-party candidate, you know, a la a Ross Perot in 92 and 96, or a Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party, which is what greased in Woodrow Wilson in 1908, I think it was. So it's no, I'm sorry, 1912. So it's just very interesting. It comes as somewhat of a surprise. I thought the Republicans would pull a little closer. I had not counted on George Bush's amazing ability to basically completely destroy most of the rest of the world and the economy of the United States and the Republican Party all in one fell swoop, which is exactly what he's done. So it's it is interesting, though, from a lot of different aspects. You know, I did vote for a black man for president of the United States. I voted for Alan Keyes, who was the presidential candidate for the American Independent Party. It is interesting from a number of different cases in point how this election is very similar to Jimmy Carter in 1976. Jimmy Carter was the last Democratic candidate to actually win the election with a majority of the popular vote. You know, just case in point, for example, Bush won the election with the popular vote of about 4.5 million in 2004. Bush lost the popular vote by about 1.5 million in 2000. Clinton did not win with a majority in 96. He won with about 46% of the vote. In 92, he won with less than 42% of the vote. The last Republican to actually win with a majority of the popular vote was actually George Bush Sr. in 1988. So it's very interesting how we're seeing the same kind of revolution and reaction that you saw in 1976, where you had Richard Nixon's resignation from the White House in relative shame. You had the loss of the Vietnam War, another massive military debacle. You had wage and price controls, which Nixon actually induced back in 1973. He actually put up wage and price controls because inflation was 4% a year, and now that it's nearing double digits, it seems hard to believe. But it is unusual. There's a lot of bad moons rising on Barack Obama's election from a strictly astrological aspect. There's something in astrology, and just stop me if you guys get bored with this. There's something in astrology which we call void of course moon, and a void of course moon is a moon that's sort of floating between two astrological signs. It means it's a you know, the moon obviously goes through a cycle of all 12 of the signs. It's the fastest moving. Technically, it's considered a planet in astrology, so it obviously moves through the signs approximately every 28 days or so. So a void of course moon, where it has no what we call aspects between either of the signs, can last anywhere from a minute or two to, I think, the longest one on record was like 3 days or so. So, you know, the average void of course moon will last half a day, sometimes a day, where it's not aspecting. And it's like floating in between signs. It's like it's in a void, which is why they call it void of course. And anything that happens under a void of course moon, you can call it sort of an abortion moon, if you will. It's nothing comes of it. You're not supposed to make important decisions. You're not supposed to sign contracts. You're not supposed to take oaths. Anything that happens under a void of course moon inevitably will get screwed up and end badly. And there's lots of great hopes and dreams at the very beginning that then just kind of all fall apart. Barack Obama is actually the first candidate this century to be nominated under void of course moon to actually win the election, number one. The election itself actually took place under void of course moon, moving in between Capricorn and Aquarius, void of course moon, the election, and the inauguration at 12 noon on January 20th, which is a Tuesday, is also going to be under void of course moon. No president in American history that has taken the oath under void of course moon has either, let me say every president that's taken the oath under void of course moon has either died in office, resigned, or been impeached. And actually the only two presidents to survive their terms were Clinton, who was, of course, impeached by the Congress, and Andrew Johnson in 1867 or something like that, but he was the successor to Abraham Lincoln. So it's very interesting that you have this candidate who is nominated under VOC Moon. I'll give you the classic example of this. He gives this great speech, you know, the Obamaopolis speech, the Greek temple speech, as they were calling it, in Denver, and he received a zero bounce in the poll. He got actually no push in the polls coming out of the Democratic convention. In essence, you can say that the economic meltdown that occurred in September is what, it, you know, because McCain was ahead, you know, it was at least dead even or ahead in a lot of the polls. That's really what I think, that and probably McCain's choice of Sarah Palin is what completely torpedoed his candidacy. I, you know, because, again, had he chosen somebody like Mitt Romney – He didn't want to pick Mitt Romney because he was afraid the fundamentalist Christians would get all upset because they're, you know, because he's Mormon. But yet he could have said, well, here's a guy who's a governor. Here's a guy who fixed the Olympics. Here's a guy who fixed Massachusetts. Here's a guy who runs a business. Here's somebody that if we go into an economic mess can pull us out the other side. But no, you know, he pulls Sarah Palin from, you know, out of his from out of a hat and supposedly connect with the base, and it obviously just kind of backfired on him. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out with great expectations and all this. Let me give you one other kind of interesting thing, and then I'll shut up here and let you ladies talk. There's a kind of an unusual thing that we call, it's a bit arcane, but it's known as, do you know anything about the Sabian Symbols by Dane Rudyard?
No, I don't.
You know anything? There's Dane Rudyard wrote a book called The Astrological Mandala, The Cycle of Transformations, and its 360 Symbolic Phases. And he came up with a series of, I guess you can call them dream symbols, if you will, for that have been amazingly prophetic for the different degrees of the sun, actually, as the Earth moves around the sun. So it's very interesting because in these brief images, he comes up with so much. I'll give you a classic example. When Bush was inaugurated in 2000, the sun was actually at 30 degrees Capricorn. And the Sabian symbol for 30 degrees Capricorn, which was to show what his presidency was going to be like, the symbol actually says, a secret meeting of men responsible for executive decisions in world affairs. And the keynote of it was the power to assume responsibility for crucial choices arrived at after mature discussions with those who share power. So it's very interesting that you know, his book, written well before Bush, talks about how we're all aware of the work of secret committees in the White House and at all levels of the government, and he says that the student of esoteric philosophy believes in the existence of what has been called an inner government, which has the power to direct or guide the evolution of our planet and of mankind. This is basically he calls it an occult hierarchy. He basically talks about it being a star chamber, and that we would see the abuses of executive power, and that the culmination of social responsibility in reference to executive power. I don't think anything describes the Bush administration better than that star chamber and a group of men who are making decisions behind the scene for everybody else in secret. And this is very interesting because now Barack Obama comes along, and he's going to be inaugurated not only under Void of Course Moon, but a Void of Course Moon at 0 degrees Aquarius. And Aquarius, of course, is the great humanizer. It is the great it's the great symbol of a community of mankind. It is the Christ figure walking across the Milky Way, pouring out the waters of enlightenment. The symbols are electromagnetic in nature. So it's very interesting because the Sabian symbol for the inauguration of this president is an old Adobe mission in California. And I think that's interesting because it means that the power inherent in all great human works to endure far beyond the worker's lifespan. So once again, here's another very interesting, somewhat ominous trigger here of a person who will achieve greatness, but only after they are dead and gone, a JFK, a Martin Luther King. And it talks about the works of the Spanish priests in California building a system of missions that mark this alien environment that obviously grew up into what we know of as California now. And it talks about the spiritual nature of the coming administration, idealistic, creative. It stresses the enduring character of human achievements ensouled by a great vision. So at least within the frame of reference of Western civilization, the symbol speaks of the projection of a noble idea into concrete forms of beauty and significance, thus of the irradiation of a civilizing power into an institution offering its primitive men the opportunity to reach a higher, more organized, and productive level of activity. That is everything that the Obama campaign, in fact, stands for. It is unfortunate because in my view of politics, it's usually just the hand needs a new puppet. And we always seem to get opposite day the minute we get a president in. It seems like every president that's supposed to represent one thing uses that facade of what they supposedly represent in the conscious minds of the people to do exactly the opposite. When Bill Clinton gets in, everybody thinks he's the big Democrat, that he's the big social reformer, and yet the first thing he does is work with Newt Gingrich and the Republicans to pass NAFTA, to open up the borders, to ship massive jobs to China, to single-handedly destroy the unions, can destroy the base of the Democratic Party, you know, and in essence destroy the Democratic Party. We've seen it come roaring back, but he single-handedly lost the Congress, lost the Senate, which the Democrats had controlled for 40-plus years. Then you have George Bush, who comes along, who promises to be a fiscal conservative, not nation-build, not go to war with people, protect the borders, you know, institute a Republican, conservative, Reagan-like government, and yet here he is doing exactly the opposite. Government has grown bigger than it ever has in 60 years. He's completely reorganized the government. He slammed us into massive debt. He's destroyed the economy. He's given us two wars that have cost close to $6 trillion, and he and his buddies have basically just looted the United States and the world 12 ways to Sunday. And you know, and not only have they looted everything, but now they're asking for the taxpayer to basically reimburse the money that they've looted out of the economy to the tune of about $1 trillion, and that's just the first thing. So something's got to be better.
Let me kind of stop you. Let me kind of go back a little bit and play a little bit of devil's advocate here.
Please.
I really wonder if everybody has Obama's real birth date, and if that's the case, you know, can he slip outside from under this cycle of the void of the?
Well, what I'm explaining right now has absolutely nothing to do with Obama's birth date at all. It has nothing to do with his birthday. What I've said is that I'm putting him into the pattern of other U.S. presidents that I've studied. This has nothing to do with when he was born or what time he was born or where he was born. This has to do with the Voiticourse moon on the presidency, on taking a human being, when they become president of the United States, assumes the power and the mantle of the office of president. So Voiticourse moon, again, is all about decision-making, is all about people being fuzzy in their decisions, being angry in their decisions, because there's going to be a big hangover, and the big hangover is going to be, okay, what do we do now? And now it's going to be put up or shut up, and I'm not sure the American people are going to be happy with the product they've got.
Let me just kind of go back into this again. Birthdays have, you know, an energy about them as well.
Sure.
And not only this, the void that you're talking about, but also a birthday has an energy.
Well,
so I'm wondering if that might supersede where he has come in here.
No, it actually has to do with the office itself. It has to do with the chart of the nation state. It has to do with I'm just showing you the patterns. Maybe, you know, maybe he can. It is, for example, the first pattern that he's broken has been nobody this century who's been nominated under a Voiticourse moon has actually won, and he's won. So that's the first pattern that he's actually broken. This is where it gets a little strange, if I can launch into a bit of another discussion here. He claims his birth date is August 4th, 1961, in Hawaii, in Honolulu, at Kalapani Hospital. At supposedly, not exactly sure what the time is actually on that certificate. The challenge has been is that a man by the name of Philip Berg, an attorney named Philip Berg, who was the former attorney general for Pennsylvania, now a private citizen, heard an interview that was done with Obama's paternal grandmother, Sarah Obama, who talks about how she and a number of his half-brothers and sisters were responsible for, actually had witnessed his birth and were responsible for assisting in his birth when his mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, had come to Kenya with his father, Barack Hussein Obama the First, and that she was not allowed to get back on a plane to return to the United States because she was in her third trimester. And the airline said, no, we're not going to let you go back to the U.S. Because of insurance reasons and whatever else. So Barack Obama was born in Kenya. And Philip Berg, obviously being an attorney and being, I might add, a left-wing Jewish supporter of Hillary Clinton, so this is not some sort of, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, right-wing conspiracy against Obama, started digging into this and asking some questions, and he claims that he's actually found Obama's birth certificate in Mombasa. And as far as we can see, we don't have any evidence that he was, and let me just give you the history here as it's playing out, we have no evidence that Barack Obama set foot in the United States until he was 10 years old. Because from Kenya, he went to Indonesia. Stanley M. Dunham then married another Muslim in Indonesia, Lolo Sotoro. At the age of approximately 6 years old, Barack Obama was then adopted by Lolo Sotoro, became Barry Sotoro at the time. Another birth certificate was issued for him, making him an Indonesian citizen at that time. At the age of 21 to 22, Obama then traveled to Pakistan in 1981, which was off limits to U.S. citizens at the time because of the war with the Russians. And of course, we had just kicked the Russians out of the Olympics, and the United States boycotted the 1980 Olympics, which made the Russians very angry. And Barack Obama, traveling under the name of Barry Sotoro, traveled to Pakistan with an Indonesian passport. So now this gives him Kenyan citizenship, Indonesian citizenship, and the challenge now becomes that he never legally changed his name, number one, back to Barack Hussein Obama. So his name is still Barry Sotoro legally, which makes his name invalid on the ballot. Number two, Philip Berg then filed a lawsuit in, I think, July, saying basically vetting the candidate, saying, you know, I have some proof here that says that he was born in Kenya and that he's not eligible to run for president. He does not fit the qualifications of the Constitution under Article 2, Section 1, that you have to be a natural-born citizen. Now, to think I'm picking on Obama here, McCain was also not born in the United States. He was born on a ship in Panama in international waters, granted to two American citizens who were serving in the military at the time. But he needed a Senate resolution, which is called the McCain Resolution, and an 11th Circuit Court legal decision in order to allow him to run for president of the United States. Now, this was based on the 1964 Supreme Court Goldwater decision, because Barry Goldwater also had to apply to the Supreme Court, because Goldwater was ineligible at the time to run for president because he was born in Arizona when Arizona was a territory, not a state. And the Supreme Court had to rule whether or not denizens of a territory, as they were called, who became citizens of the United States, were eligible to run for president, and they said that, in fact, he did. So I feel kind of sorry for the judge in this case, because the judge just figured, well, this is no big deal. The judge then asked the Democratic National Committee and Barack Obama and Howard Dean, well, just submit his birth certificate in Hawaii, and we're done. This is just kind of a nuisance, and it's no big deal. Well, they didn't respond. The only response that they made to Philip Berg was to post what they called a typed certificate of live birth, no signatures, an actual birth certificate like you and I have to get a driver's license, has the signatures of our mothers, our fathers, the doctors, the hospitals. It's what we call the long form. All they were willing to post was this kind of redacted certificate of live birth from Kalapani Hospital. Philip Berg, and by the way, they only posted it on the website, which was called like fightthesmear.com or something. They did not submit that birth certificate to the court, because Philip Berg took that certificate, ran it through three forensic experts to basically conclude that the certificate was fake, that it was a forgery, and that it was the certificate of his younger sister, who was born in Kalapani Hospital some 10 years later or so, and that it was forged, and still could not produce the long form. So they answered the suit by simply saying, well, just dismiss this because it's ridiculous. We're not going to produce anything. And so after 45 days, they defaulted. Philip Berg then filed paperwork to say, okay, well, I win. I win because silence is acquiescence. Therefore, by default, I win. Barack Obama has admitted to all 56 charges that include him running for president under an alias. He was asked on the Bar Association documents whether he'd been known by any other names. He said no. That's perjury. It goes on and on and on and on and on. So
the judge
is just in a complete quandary, because what's he supposed to do? He doesn't know what to do. So
why didn't the Republican Party bring this out? They were bringing out a bunch of others.
Well, here's the last part of this. The last part of this is that the judge in the case received a memo from Michelle Obama's law firm, and that memo was then basically just reprinted as the judge's decision. And this, once again, establishes a very intense constitutional argument here that the case was dismissed by the judge, claiming that Philip Berg, as a U.S. citizen and as a voter, had no standing to question the qualifications to run for office of a running politician. Well, that's just absurd from a dozen different angles, because now who is it who actually has the standing, and this is the legal term, the standing to vet a candidate for president of the United States? You and I need more ID, apparently, to go get a driver's license or a passport than Barack Obama has produced to anybody to prove that he's not a citizen of Kenya, to prove that he wasn't adopted in Indonesia, to prove that he ever took the oath of allegiance to the United States to become a citizen once he got here. I mean, it's outrageous from a dozen different fronts. So I spoke to Philip Berg, and I called the folks at Coast to Coast to get them on there. I called Michael Savage because, you know, he and I aren't great friends, but, you know, we go back a ways.
Michael Savage
jumps all over this. But I then called Dana Rohrabacher, who is an old childhood friend of mine. I worked on his campaign in 1988, and Dana's the U.S. Congressman, Republican from Palos Verdes. And I said, do you know about what's going on with Barack Obama? And he goes, yeah, you mean that he's not a citizen? And I said, yeah. And he goes, we know all about it. And I'm like, you're a congressman, for God's sakes. You sit on the House Security Committee. You're a senior congressman from California. How come nobody's doing anything about this? And he's like, what can we do? I'm like, well, Berg has taken this to the Supreme Court, and now, because the case is dismissed, he's now filed it with the Supreme Court. They're now saying that the people who are responsible for vetting the candidate, and this is a bit of a stretch because they're now suing in a dozen different lawsuits in Washington, I think was the first one that was filed, Washington State. They're suing the Secretary of State of each one of the states, claiming that they have the responsibility because they are the ones responsible for releasing the electors to the Electoral College and actually releasing the because apparently you have to be an elector. You have to be a member of the Electoral College, because what they also said to Philip Berg, and this is even more interesting, is that all of us as U.S. citizens and voters don't really vote for the President of the United States. As you know, as we saw in Bush v. Al Gore in 2000 with the Supreme Court, we don't really vote for president. What we do is we suggest by our popular vote that electors be nominated to the Electoral College, and the Electoral College then votes, and it is only by tradition, they're not bound legally, contractually, in any other way to actually vote for the majority of whoever wins in their state. They simply do it traditionally. They say, okay, well, if Obama wins in my state, then traditionally I will cast my votes for Obama to express the will of the people. But the Electoral College can vote for anybody they want. They can completely supersede the population. So, again, who has standing to vet the President of the United States? Apparently it's either a member of the Electoral College or a Secretary of State of one of the sovereign states, because they have to release their electors to vote. So there's a whole series of really intense constitutional questions, and these guys aren't kidding around. The ACLU is involved in this now, and everybody's wondering, well, why is this all in the newspapers and wherever else? The only thing I can think of is that Philip Berg also filed a number of lawsuits in regards to 9/11, in regards to the government exposing information about 9/11. And so I guess if you get involved with Philip Berg and kind of scratch the surface, then the media has to talk a little bit about all of his work with 9/11. It gets even freakier, because remember when Obama suspended his campaign for 2 days and went to go visit his sick grandmother in Hawaii?
Yes.
Well, he had a number of meetings with the Democratic governor of Hawaii, and 2 days after he left, denying Freedom of Information Acts, denying any requests which any citizen can get a hold of a public record, right after he left Hawaii, and his grandmother, I'm very sorry for him that his grandmother died, and the governor of Hawaii has now sealed all of his records, for not just him, but for all of his family, which means that in violation of Freedom of Information Act, and he's now taken a whole series of public records, taken them out of the public purview, and sealed all of them. So why? Why would a governor go to this length? Why go to all this trouble unless something is there? And I'm just saying that with the Void of Course Moon, with the election, with everything that's going on, can you imagine what would happen if the Supreme Court actually then decided to remove a sitting president of the United States because he's not qualified under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. Can you imagine what would happen?
So if this happens after, it would be Biden who would become president.
Yeah. So
but
here's the weird part. If it happened before, one other interesting constitutional point, if a president-elect were to be found not qualified or die or something was to happen to him, in other words, between November 4th and January 20th, then the Electoral College would simply meet. And the Electoral College, because the Electoral College is actually ensconced between for the entire point, the Electoral College is actually in session technically from November 4th until January 20th. And they would then be able to vote for anybody for President of the United States. It's not automatically the vice president-elect. The Electoral College would then have to vote again to pick to actually pick who the president would be. So, I mean,
then
it's been a whole series of... I'm sorry?
Then it would become Hillary.
That's possible. The Electoral College would say, well, as the forefathers, as our founding fathers did, which I thought was an excellent system. When we first started out, there was only one political party in the United States, and that was the Federalists. And it was the person who became vice president was the person who got the second most votes for president. So George Washington got obviously the most votes, and John Adams got two votes. He was elected almost unanimously. So John Adams then became the first vice president. And that's why you got these very interesting political pairings of, you know, John Adams as president with Thomas Jefferson as vice president, because you had these, you know, you had these weird things where the person who got the second most votes for president would become vice president, which is a fantastic check and balance, really, on the executive branch. I mean, do you think Bush would be able to get away with half the stuff he got away with if Al Gore was actually vice president of the United States again?
No.
No. So it's just kind of interesting. So, look, it's all a big kind of quandary about, you know, about what's going on, and you know, I have no, you know, I didn't vote for either of these guys, so I don't really have any horse in this race. I think it's fantastic that an African American was elected president of the United States. I think that the idealism of the campaign is great. I think I think what's going to happen, like Robert Redford said in The Candidate when he won, it's like, what are we going to do now? He just better deliver on something. The guys that he's actually putting in, I mean, they were literally, I am not kidding when I say this, on the Today Show this morning, they were actually seriously discussing that Oprah Winfrey might actually be handed the job of press secretary of the White House.
Well, I think she's too busy running her own business to accept
it. I would think
it.
So. I think it would be a huge step down for her. She makes more money than the government, so it's just kind of crazy. So there's a lot of really wild, freaky things that are going to happen. I think it's interesting that America's popularity has gone up around the world. It just goes to show how just universally.
I think it was fantastic. With all, you know, Australia, Japan, they were all celebrating that Obama became president. I thought.
I'm not so sure they were celebrating him becoming president as they were expressing how much the world just despised George Bush and how badly, you know. And I'm somewhat of a presidential historian. I mean, going back through, you know, I'm pretty good at history and social studies and whatever else. And I can name a whole bunch of presidents that have done really bad things, but have done good things for the people. And again, coming from a guy who was a Reagan Republican and, you know, a longtime conservative, I can't think of a single thing that Bush did that was good for the people that wasn't directly within the purview of the agenda of his buddies looting the country 12 ways to Sunday. You know, whether or not it's the, quote, tax cuts or him giving away the surplus, which then just got us into more debt and got us right back in with the bankers, or him tricking up two wars that have cost us somewhere to the tune of about $6 trillion that have looted the countries. I mean, the wars that he started have now cost more than basically Vietnam, Korea, and the First World War combined.
Well, he wants to go down in history. He's going to go down in history as the worst president.
Yeah, but, you know, I might also point out that, you know, his approval rating at somewhere around 18% or something, but the approval rating of the Democratic Congress is single digits. It's between 8 and 9%. So the American people are handing this country over to a Congress that they think less of than the President of the United States. So from a strictly metaphysical standpoint, from a strictly psychic aspect here, the Clinton administration was interesting because from 92 to 2000, you had, I mean, Clinton was the luckiest son of a gun to walk on two legs. You had a guy who was only came in because of a three candidate race, because Ross Perot took 22% of the vote. I don't think Clinton thought in a million years when Clinton began to run in 1990. George Bush Senior's approval rating was somewhere to the tune of about 87%. You know, he just won Desert Storm, and nobody thought about this. And I was saying, George Bush is going to lose in 92. He's going to be beaten by a dark horse Democrat. And I predicted the Clinton thing all along the way. I gave exact percentages he would win by. I predicted that Perot would drop out of the race and then re-enter the race, and he would get 22% of the vote, and that we'd see Clinton. But what Clinton rode was the peace dividend of the fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of the Soviet Union, a massive cutting in military spending, and at the same time, looking at it psychically, or should I say prophetically, the Mayan calendar, or what we call the expansion and contraction of the world tree, saw that period of time, from 92 to about 2000 or so, as being an extended period of peace and prosperity that would allow people to prepare for the bad times that were coming. So if you look at the overall purview of history, Clinton was just in the right place at the right time, riding a gigantic surplus in the budget because of the, I guess what you would call the victory surplus of what happened with the fall of the Soviet Union. Barack Obama has none of those advantages, none. Clinton also, being kind of a very anti-military, not so much of a military-industrial kind of guy, people don't realize that from 92 to 1998 was the longest extended period of peace in human history. There was not a single war between two countries in that period of time. There were some civil wars and some skirmishes, Rwanda and Burundi, Bosnia, Serbia, Herzegovina, I guess could count as a civil war. But we did not have a single war between two countries for the first time for about 7 years or so, 8 years or so, for the first time in virtually human history. So Barack Obama, again, is not going to be riding the same thing. He is, however, these are all the changes and shifts that are going on. In August of from August 15th through August 30th, looking at the Mayan calendar, we're in the end of the galactic week, where this galactic week that's happening, which leads up to the end of time in 2012, is divided into four sections. You've got it starts in January 1999 and ends between, depending on which expert you talk to, the Aztec calendar ends on October 28th of 2011, and the Mayan calendar ends on December, flip a coin, 21st, 22nd, 23rd of 2012. The idea here is that 16.5 billion years of evolution have been building, of literally galactic evolution, have been building to this point where, with the Mayan calendar, it goes through a series of steps. There's like nine steps to the Pyramid of Palenque and the Yucatan, and those nine steps then translate to 12 cycles within the steps, and 9 times 12 is 108, and so it goes all the way up through the cycle of 108, where we progress upwards, upwards, upwards. So we've gone from a cellular development to a personal development to a tribal development to a national development to an awareness of nations, if you will, to a planetary development to an awareness of all of those on the planet. And this phase from January 99 through 2012 is about galactic consciousness, which they claim we're going to achieve in 2012. So we've now gone through, in the galactic week, let's split that up into 3 years or so. We've gone through the serpent, which is the snake in the grass, which is interesting because that's when Bush was elected. We then, from the serpent, it goes to the dog bounding over the grass. Then it goes from the eagle, who is looking at the patterns of life and existence. And between August 15th and August 30th, the Mayan calendar said that there would be a massive pulse of peace and energy that would come from the east that would realign the right and left hemispheres of the brain, the eastern and western hemispheres of the brain. And lo and behold, what happens? The Olympics occur in China with a pulse of or beam of energy that comes from the east. Between August 15th and August 30th, you have close to 5 billion people on the planet, the single largest gathering of human beings to see any event in the history of the world, which now brings us into the energy of the sun, the last 3 years or so, leading up to 2012. That's number one. Number two, yesterday, November 5th, was the beginning of a whole new cycle of the red magnetic dragon, a whole new what they call a tun in the Mayan calendar, which means that the energy is going to be substantially different. And at the same time, we're entering what the calendar calls, there's 7 days, or should I say, there's 7 days and nights, which is a grand total of about 14 years or so, leading up to the end of this. So we've just gone through the fifth night, which the Mayans have said would be a year of Armageddon, would be a year of war, would be a year of financial collapse. And I wrote all about this last year, saying that before the election, we'd see the stock market crash to about the 9,200 range, which is exactly what it's at today. We would see a massive economic collapse. And I said a year ago, I said, I can't believe that the American people, with the kind of economic collapse that I'm seeing before the election, are going to put a socialist in as president of the United States. I said that a year ago, and suddenly I'm hearing, I'm telling you, ladies, it's so weird to hear my own words literally like repeated back to me through people in the media. And I know a lot of people get my newsletter or listen to what I have to say on the radio, but I mean, my wife just jumps up and down and points at the TV and says, "Oh my God, you said that on the radio like a year ago," where I talked about socialists and, you know, whatever else, but which I think is a joke. The Republicans claiming Barack Obama is socialist when George Bush has basically nationalized the economy, he's now privatized debt, and that basically when you socialize debt and you privatize profit, where does it end? I mean, as far as we know, the Republic as we know it just ended on October 1st, 2008. The Constitution's obviously not in force anymore. Nobody's obeying it. Nobody cares. You know, we've got a guy who, and I know this may sound harsh, but let me say it anyway, we've got a guy who technically might be an illegal alien as president of the United States. And again, I'm not against or for the guy. I'm just saying that there's certain rules that need to be followed. And I've taken a lot of flack from people, you know, these haters out there, you know, are sending these emails like, well, you're just nitpicking and, you know, a man's innocent until he's proven guilty. And that's like demanding a free pizza when the guy's 3 minutes late. And I was like, no, there's rules that have to be followed. Under that, well, let's just make Arnold Schwarzenegger president. Why doesn't he just run in 2012? Well, he can't because he wasn't born here. The bottom line is that we don't know if Barack Obama, who, again, is a constitutional scholar, supposedly, you know, taught constitutional law at, I think, Cornell, has a degree from Harvard Law, head of the Harvard Law Review. You don't think he would know what's going on? And what's happening is he and Michelle now are covering their tracks. I mean, that's why he went to Hawaii. That's why the governor sealed his records. That's why, so they're worried about it, and there's people on the inside that know what's going on. Go ahead.
I have two questions. Why didn't the Republicans get their teeth into this and let the rumor out? And why would Obama wait so long to cover his tracks?
I have no idea. That's not, you know, not my job. I don't know why they wouldn't do something with it. It's out there. You know, Philip Berg has had close to 70 million hits on his website. Again, he filed the lawsuit. You would think that all they would have to do, the judge, I mean, he felt sorry for the judge. All they would have to do is post his certificate on somewhere. And they couldn't do it. And the judge was like, okay. So the judge dismissing the case based on his standing rather than simply saying, okay, well, it's dismissed because they produced a certificate. I'm sure the judge was just thinking, well, this is no big deal. And then when suddenly they hit this hive of wasps with a stick and everything started buzzing around and he starts getting faxes from Michelle Obama's law firm basically saying, you know, dismiss this case based on standing, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to get weird, and Barack Obama is a nexus point in human history because of all the various firsts, you know, being a senator, which is very unusual, but there are also very, very disturbing similarities between Barack Obama and JFK. The fact that you hang out with all the Kennedys and the fact that they're going to call his administration Obama lots and making all these comparisons with JFK. I mean, can you stand around that many Kennedys without lightning hitting you too? And let me give you one other thing too, because in my Delphi Associates newsletter, I printed with all my experience at Oxford and all this other stuff. Philip Berg claims that he has Barack Obama's real birth time in Mombasa, Kenya. So I did an astrological chart for Obama, and I printed it in the newsletter. So it's the first astrological chart I think ever on the genuine birth date on Obama, which is August 4th of 1961 at 7:24 p.m. In Mombasa, Kenya. And it changes his chart drastically. And I got in this argument with people like, you know, Rob Hand at the Astrological Institute. And hand was just, you know, well, you know, that's just because the right wing just lies and they're just lying. And I sent him a couple of things saying, well, you know, there may be the possibility. He wouldn't even look at it, not even from an academic standpoint. These guys are so blinded by their politics that I was very surprised that Mr. Hand is a well-respected academic and a person who's a giant in the astrological community would be so small-minded about this, because I sent him the birth time and I said, well, what about the void of course moon? Can you talk about that? And he basically just completely blew me off like I was just some peasant or I was some hater that was just bugging him. But so I just did the birth chart, and it's just very interesting because very certain things change. Just not to get into the particulars of it, but he's got 12th house all over it, which is death and assassination. He's got a chart that's very similar to Robert Kennedy. He's got what we call in astrocartography, which is like places where you should live. He's got a Mars line that before on his old chart, the Hawaiian chart, ran through Iraq and Iran, and now that Mars line runs directly through Pakistan and India. So it shows that he will be taking military action in Pakistan, possibly with India against Pakistan. He's got the use of nuclear weapons all through his chart because he's got a bunch of Aquarius and a bunch of 12th house stuff. What better way than to put a black man in office for somebody who could just conceivably send troops into the inner cities to crush riots in the ghettos and the urban cities? What better way to get a guy who would possibly use nuclear weapons against Muslim countries than somebody who has a Muslim background, you know, whose father was Muslim, whose stepfather was Muslim, who went to a Wahhabi school in Indonesia? I'm not saying he's a Muslim now. I'm just saying that, once again, if you play the opposite game of the hand just needing a new puppet, what better way than to just create chaos throughout the world? It's also very disheartening, too, because I did the etymology of his name as well. This is a lot of fun. I did John McCain, and John McCain, John means beloved in Hebrew, Mac means son of. Cain actually means spear maker or weapons maker. So John McCain's name meant beloved son of the weapons makers. Barack Obama is interesting because Barak in Hebrew means the lightning that comes before the thunder. Hussein is Arabic, which means the handsome boy or the handsome young man. And Obama actually means from the heights or the high places. So it is pretty interesting because in Hebrew, his name actually means the handsome young man who falls from the heights of the high places comes from the heights of the high places like lightning. And it is really weird and disconcerting that Jesus actually says a number of times, I saw Satan fall from the heavens like lightning, like Barak is the exact words that he used. So it's a little disconcerting that all of his names actually are nom de plumes or nom de guerre, if you will, for Satan and Lucifer. Bedrock also in Swahili, in all fairness, Bedrock in Swahili means he who is blessed, and it's kind of a twist of Baruch from the Hebrew, which means blessed. And Obama actually in Swahili means he who bends or leans. So he would be the blessed young man who bends or leans is his name in Swahili, but in Hebrew his name is actually the handsome young man who falls or comes from the heights of heaven like lightning, which is the description that Jesus gave for the Antichrist or the devil. And I do point out to people, anybody that, once again, slavishly follows some leader or some charismatic, I mentioned to people, you know, you watching that inauguration, I just thought, well, how do you think the devil is going to come? Do you think he's going to come like George Bush, where everybody hates him, or is he going to be some great charismatic figure who gives a good speech, who enrolls everybody in what's going on? So my warning is caution to people out there.
Do you think a group like the Illuminati could be behind all of this?
Well, they're behind it, but if you understand, and we don't have much time left here, but we only have an hour today, right?
Right.
Okay.
We have 9 minutes.
All right. Well, just think about how this played out. The there has been a Bush or a Clinton on the presidential ticket for 37 years, I think it was, from 80. Obviously Bush, there's been a Bush or Clinton on the presidential ticket the last 37 years, if I'm doing my math correctly, from 1980, 38 years, I guess. You had a gigantic split in the Bilderbergers, which are these very wealthy people that meet in Europe, the Illuminati, if you will, and you had a huge split between the Bush-Clinton Rockefeller crime syndicate in the United States, and the Rothschild-run royal families, who of which their poster boy or main leader is George Soros, you know, the billionaire. This split happened in 2002 over the invasion of Iraq. The Bilderbergers, the European Rothschild gang, did not want Bush to invade Iraq. They insisted, and they said, well, if you invade Iraq, then the war is only going to last 6 weeks, and it's just to remove Saddam Hussein. That's it. Leave the infrastructure intact. Leave everything alone because, you know, the plan is going perfectly. And Bush and Cheney just decided that they were going to blow the country to smithereens, rebuild the country, you know, loot the world for trillions of dollars. George Soros was so mad that he spent $6 million of his own money creating Air America, from which you got, you know, Rachel Maddow and Rocky Rhodes and Rachel Rhodes, Rocky Rhodes, and Al Franken, who's now in a recount in Minnesota to be senator. And if the Republicans can't beat a lunatic like Al Franken, then they might as well just pack up their bags and go home. So what you've seen is they wanted Hillary, and they were spending the money behind Hillary. Hillary had secret meetings in the White House where she was told this is how it's going to be when you take over. And the bottom line was is that you have now seen the split between the European Rothschild consortium with George Soros basically just opening. I mean, Soros single-handedly funded Obama's campaign. I mean, Obama spent five times as much money as McCain did, most of it out of George Soros' pocket. You've also seen, and this is too much to explain, but there's another aspect here with the red and green Chinese tongs that have made direct threats against the Illuminati, saying that if the election didn't go off, you know, the way it was supposed to, that there would be retribution taken. I mean, the tongs have said there's 6 million of us, and there's only 10,000 of you, and we know who you are and where you live, and we can wipe you out in 24 hours. But that's a whole sort of interesting kind of deal. I'm just saying that the election I was the only one that said Hillary Clinton's not going to be president of the United States, that she's not electable, that I don't know what these people are thinking. When every other psychic and every other astrologer was saying it was all going to be Hillary Clinton, I kept saying it's not going to be anyone expects. I did sit the election out. I didn't make a prediction one way or another. I thought there would be a few more shocks here, but it ain't over till it's over. And whoever winds up president of the United States, well, Barack Obama is president of the United States, I can tell you, not only because of the void of course moon, but Pluto moves into Capricorn on November 27th. Pluto last moved into Capricorn during the American Revolutionary War between about 1765 and about 1780 or so. You are going to see leaders all around the world die, resign, be recycled. It is literally going to be like a revolving door on the palaces and White Houses of the world. It doesn't matter who is president or prime minister of what country, they're not going to be there long, because the whole point of Pluto, which represents the underground, death, murder, secret plots, assassinations, earthquakes, disruption, atomic energy, and Capricorn, which is the opposite of the United States, which is a cancer country, but it rules presidents, kings, prime ministers, social systems, governments, revolt. Everything is just, I mean, basically just everything is going to be thrown into complete shock and total chaos by this whole Pluto and Capricorn movement. The Mayan culture and civilization began with Pluto and Capricorn and ended with Pluto and Capricorn. So it is fascinating that Pluto moving into Capricorn from now, 2008, November 27th, through 2024 is when the Mayan calendar actually ends. And at the same time, you've also got the beginning of the sixth day, which is going to be an uneasy balance between the East and the West and a merging of the right and left-hand side of the brain. And I don't think anybody actually represents that merging of East and West, Africa and America, Oriental cultures and religions like Islam meeting Christianity. I mean, nobody represents that balance of the East and the West better than Barack Obama. I mean, he's the poster boy for everything that the Mayan calendar is talking about, everything that the astrological stuff is talking about. And we're going to need somebody who is at least compassionate, because there's going to be a series of massive disasters that are about ready to happen, which, again, you know, Barack Obama may, if he survives the Supreme Court challenge and whatever else, may go down as one of the greatest presidents in history, simply because of the nature of the massive challenges that he's going to have to face.
Does that mean in November that the stock market will also do a little more crumble?
That's one more. I mean, the market right now is valued at I mean, it's only worth about 6,500 if you actually look at the 30 companies or so. So the fact that it's still floating around 9,000 or so is really a miracle. And it was down, you know, it was down a bunch. It was down in the underneath 8,000 or so, the 7,800 range, and then went right back up again. Well, I think the market's going to do well. You saw that the market went down 400 points when Obama got in. The markets don't do well under single administrations. They like divided government because nothing gets done. They like Republican presidents, Democratic Congresses. The minute you get a Democratic president with a Democratic House and Senate, the stock market traditionally does not do better. But I also might want to point out that the stock market, actually, if you look at the percentages, the stock market does better under Democrats than it does under Republicans. And I know that sounds weird, but the stock market goes up 14 to 16% under Democrats, if you look at it since it was formed, and it goes up only about 7 to 9% under Republicans. So it's, you know, there should be some kind of economic recovery, but, you know, the depression that we're entering into has the potential of lasting until about 2016. But the point of all of this is to get people disassociated and detached from their stuff so that we start forming a new civilization and new communities that are based, in essence, on devotion to the spiritual rather than the material. And unfortunately, God has, you know, a size, you know, billion boot that he has a tendency to stick up our butts because, you know, humanity does not evolve in periods of comfort. And it's this whole next 4 years is not going to be comfortable.
It's going to be a cleansing.
Exactly. You're exactly right. But and I ask people, what do you think the dissolution of a society and civilization and an economy that's based on slavery and lies and oppression was going to look like? That's what we're seeing.
You think people should keep their gold?
Absolutely. You know, look at the Carter administration. The Carter administration interest rates were 22%. Gold was $800 to $850 an ounce. If you adjust that now, for what's going on, the only reason gold and silver have tanked is because the European banks dumped billions of dollars of gold in order for them to get hard currency in order to basically float their economies. You've already seen gold. My prediction was we'd see gold go down about 725. I think it went down about 700 or so, and that we would see gold start to skyrocket back up to about 1,200 or so. The biggest investment, and if you really, I would take every dime I own right now, if you're talking about long term, and try to put it into silver, because silver at $9 an ounce, and I think it's up from that a little bit. Silver at $9 an ounce, I still think is going to go to 25. I still think it's going to go to 30 beyond that. But silver and gold. I might also add the Bible says that in the last days people will throw silver and gold in the streets because ultimately it's about friends, family, community, and it's about what you know and who you know. That's all anything ever comes down to.
Exactly.
In any crisis. And that means to have a family. That means to have people to do radio shows like this one. That means to have, you know, ladies of great wisdom and great grace like the two of you, you know, being out there and presenting the alternatives and pushing the envelope every day. So congratulations on that. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. And we know how busy you are, so we thank you for being with us and taking the time to be here.
Love it. Thank you. You're my favorite people, so I hope to see you up at the Northern California Expo coming up, I think, February, March or something. And can I pump my newsletter just real quick?
Sure.
The Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow. Our motto is tomorrow's headlines today. You can check it out on SeanDavidMorton.com. That's S-E-A-N, David Morton, M-O-R-T-O-N.com. The Delphi Associates newsletter is $65 a year. It's no advertising. It's 20 pages, full-color magazine. We talk about the stock market, future trends, you know, astrology, the elections, anything you want. And actually, if you sign up now, we're going to have, I think, like three, possibly four issues coming out just before the end of the year to kind of get caught up here. So, also, there's all kinds of lists of products and everything else.
We're out of time. Sean, it's gorgeous.
The hour always flies by with you, Sean.
I'm yakky today. I got a lot of stuff to talk about. So thank you. Thank you for being so patient.
All right.
Well, and we hope to have you back soon.
Oh, thanks again, Paula. Thank you, Taz.
You're welcome.
I'll talk to you soon. God bless.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Taz and Paula Show, and you can head out to our website at tazandpaulashow.com, and that's T-A-Z-Z, and is also spelled out A-N-D, paulashow.com.
Until next week.
This is 91.5 FM, KKUP Cupertino, and we'll be right back with Larry Grant. And I know